I'm Jerry, the current chapter master of the 40K Fight Club chapter known as Adeptus Fanaticus.
And I'm Jason, the creator of the Army Showcase, and today we're going to talk about running your own game club in this episode of the Tabletop Battlefield. So welcome back, everybody, to Season 2 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast of the Army Showcase over at www.tabletopbattlefield.com. And we're getting towards the end of Season 2 here. We're actually on Episode 24, and for all those keeping track, this is actually the 50th full-length episode of the show we've done. So we've been at this a long time, but we're getting near the end of Season 2 here. And what we're doing today is, this kind of goes a little bit tied to what we've been talking about in previous shows, except we're doing 40K instead of MechWarrior, but past couple shows, we've kind of talked a lot about, in the case of, well, originally it was just MechWarrior getting canceled, then the whole WizKids company tanked and closed, like, about November 10th. So we've been talking about, in the case of just games in general, how do you kind of keep going, how do you get really good community support behind it, more player support, when the, you know, the company may or may not, you know, provide adequate support for some reason or other, which obviously Games Workshop still does plenty of support for 40K, but what I brought Jerry on here for, he's the head of a local club called Adeptus Fanaticus. It's been hugely successful. How many guys do you got usually in your meetings?
Well, our chapter nights usually draw between 20 and 30 guys easily.
So you packed that little Games Workshop store over
there. Yeah, it gets a little warm time in there.
So anyway, so let's start off. So I guess we're going to ask you a little bit about insight in how your club was created, you know, how things have gone in the past, what kind of things you've done, why you did things, what kind of problems you encountered, that kind of stuff. You know, help people out a little bit if they're interested in forming their own kind of a club.
Sure.
So let's start with the obvious question. What is Adeptus Fanaticus?
Well, Adeptus Fanaticus, at the core of what it is just a bunch of guys that like to sit around a table and play games. We enjoy every aspect of the hobby. We're trying to be very open in what we do. We have guys that enjoy nothing more than like to paint, convert, and just enjoy the sculpting aspect. In fact, one of our members is a Golden Demon winner.
Cool.
We even have people who love nothing more than beating face and taking names in a tournament setting. And we have guys who want to do nothing more than just play a game, enjoy the storyline, have some campaigns, and then there are others that like to do it all. So we try not to tag ourselves to one side of the hobby or the other. We each have our own opinions as to what right looks like, but generally we all respect each other's opinions on where the hobby sits and what it really means to us.
And of course, Adeptus Fanatic just sounds like a very Warhammer 40K name.
Absolutely.
But are you guys dedicated to 40K or what or not?
No. Actually, we have a wide mix. Now, granted, 40K is the most popular version of the hobby for Games Workshop, but
it's at least around here, I think it's probably the most popular game, period.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And frankly, we are based in a GW store, so that's what people gravitate to. It's the easiest one to jump in and start playing. But we have rabid Lord of the Rings players. We have very...
Fun game.
Exactly. Well, it's a great game. It's the best game I rarely play. We have very, very dedicated fantasy players. In fact, we are all part, most of us are part of the local tournament scene here called the Great Lakes Warhammer League.
Okay.
Recommend anybody to check that out. They do a yearly tournament every year. It's a kind of a big circuit that culminates in a big tournament down in Pandemonium in Garden City. And actually this year, Adeptus Fanaticus is going to have its own division within that tournament scene. So, yeah, we play all three of the games. And in fact, it's not the only game we play. We got some of the guys also play War Machine. They also play Dungeons & Dragons. In fact, the club just started their own D&D night on Monday nights.
Oh, okay. That's kind of cool. I tell you, that's not in the GW store. You're playing War Machine.
Oh, no, it's not. We call it the other game when we talk about it.
So what about the specialty games? Like, do you ever play, you know, Battlefleet Gothic or...
Mordheim, Necromunda, absolutely. Space Hulk. Oh, I love me some Space Hulk. In fact, I have three of the original box sets still. We actually, last year, some of the guys ran a three-month Mordheim campaign.
So we
enjoy the hobby at all of its aspects and any of the versions of it that you can find. I still believe some of the guys are still doing an Inquisitor campaign.
Okay.
And many of them are trying to get I forget what the role-playing game is called.
Dark Heresy?
Dark Heresy. They're trying to get a Dark Heresy campaign started.
That's kind of neat. So, talk about the history of the game, history of your club. Like, how long have you been around? And just give us a little brief history of how you got from where you were to where you are today.
Well, the boring version of it is that...
The boring version.
Yeah. The boring version is that Fanaticus has only been here a year. We had our founding day on July 11th, which incidentally coincided with the release of 5th edition.
Mm-hmm. So you're July 11, 2007 when you guys started?
Yep. Okay. But it really started when I was originally a member of another 40K Fight Club chapter called the Ordo Fraternitas down out of Garden City.
Okay.
A very big group, very active group, a very veteran group of guys. I moved too far away, couldn't attend the games there anymore, and I was once the chapter master of that club. So I had started the what we call affectionately the OF, the Ordo Fraternitas there. And when I moved and then couldn't drive down to Pandemonium as much anymore, the Rochester store in GW opened up, and got to know the guys there pretty well. And one of them asked me, why don't we start our own club?
Mm-hmm.
Well, deep soul searching on my part said, you know what? Let's do it. Let's start our own club. So I left the Ordo Fraternitas in the capable hands of a friend of mine, Jeff Wild, then moved up to the Primarchs of the 40K Fight Club, petitioned for a new chapter to be formed.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I know sound like a bunch of fanboys, but that's exactly what it is. Check out the 40K Fight Club, and we have Primarchs and Chapter Masters. And the whole
loading up right here.
And so I petitioned them for a chapter, they approved it, and we started the founding. We had to do an event. Part of the thing is you have to pick, for your founding day, you have to pick one event. And we did. Me and one of the future officers, we built a table called the Super Grippa. It's based off of a very old event that GW put out about a decade ago.
Super Grippa?
Yeah, it's kind of a orc-ish dirt bike cross racing game.
Okay, I'll dig it up here. We'll talk about it a little bit later, but keep going.
So we built a table for it, and we held an event in the store. had some loose rules about if you play the game for the next 3 hours, you become part of the chapter, and things took off from there. So we started really strong with about 10 to 15 guys that were really interested in doing it. We pushed it, we popularized it. I mean, in a way, if you want to, it's not as simple to just post a flyer in your store and say, look, if you want to join me, I'll be here every Tuesday night, we'll play some games. If you really want to make a go of a club, you really got to put a lot of work behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is the mystique. You build the mystique of what your club is going to be and what they do. We put flyers up that kind of said, you know, it had a warrior priest with a beast head on it that said, look, join us or end up like him. You know, kind of in your face. Plus, we also asked GW for some recognition, a little support, and they gave us every Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
So on Friday nights, after the store closes, they close the doors, and we're the ones not allowed in, so we can do whatever we want. Well, we own the store for the most part during the day. We paint. It's a gaming night for us, but we always make sure we have events. So that's it in a nutshell. You know, we always try to keep it fresh, keep members involved, and keep doing things. We even have our own website, AdeptusFanaticus.com.
I'll put a link to that in the show notes.
And we do pattern ourselves, again, the fanboy aspect, which is why people keep coming back to us, is we pattern ourselves after an Astartes chapter. Of course, I am the chapter master.
Mm-hmm.
We have officers, as every club does, but we call them masters of the chapter. I have a master of recruits who's responsible for making sure people come into the club and maintains the standards of it. Excuse me. We also have a master of the arsenal who's responsible for all the terrain we've made and all the tables that we build. We have a chief librarian who's our secretary, maintains our records.
Mm-hmm.
We have a master of the watch who's our treasurer, maintains our funds. And let me think, do I have another? We have a master of the forge who's responsible for the website and the forums.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So then we have battle brothers, we have scouts. We do have, no one's yet done it, rank structure. We have a sergeant. We have assault marines and terminators.
Hmm.
And to achieve those three ranks, you have to do things hobby-wise. So while we've got the tournament side, we've got the game-playing side, we had to do something for people that wanted to expand their hobby beyond just that to do painting and stuff. So to be a sergeant, you have to have 1,000 points of one of the three game systems painted.
Okay.
To be an assault marine, you have to have like 1,500 points, I think something like 400 for Lord of the Rings painted. Mm-hmm. Of two of different type of armies. So you have to have 40K and or Fantasy or Lord of the Rings or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
To be a Terminator, you have to have all three.
Okay.
Then we also have the Honor Guard. The Honor Guard are the ones that new recruits have to play against in order to come into the chapter. I'll talk about our recruiting standards in a little while. But then we also have veterans. And veterans are ones that decide they're going to stick around the club a little while and take a little bit of responsibility for the club and their own actions, so they donate $5 a year to the club. And for that, they get personalized emails. They get things that I call war gear. One of those is 40K flavored ringtones. believe it or not, we actually have 40K ringtones.
Do you have them on your iPhone?
I absolutely do.
Okay, I'll bring them over for a little bit. As long as I don't get a call, I won't mess too much up with the audio.
No.
Let's hear some of these things. What are they? Are they?
Well, I'll just play it. Some of them, I think I only have the Chaos flavored ones on here, but they're actually quite interesting.
That's all right.
So while we have that, we're also going to give them websites where people can post their pictures of their armies and things like that. Mm-hmm. So here's one of these ringtones.
Just gonna hold it up to your microphone up there. Where's that from?
It's from the old game called Chaos Gate.
Is that old computer game War?
Yeah, it's one of the first ones that came out. Or my personal favorite. And then another one. The heat of a thousand suns shall destroy you. And I have about 50 more that I haven't.
Oh wow!
I haven't actually officially posted up there for everyone to get yet. We'll reveal those as we get more and more people. But those are three of the best ones people have, the veterans have pulled and like to use.
That's pretty cool.
So what else? Our recruiting standards.
Okay. Well, I got one question for you. You keep mentioning this 40K Fight Club. What's that?
The 40K Fight Club.
So you say you're like a branch of the 40K Fight Club.
Yeah, the 40K Fight Club is a great community. It was started by the Primarchs a while ago, almost 5 or 6 years ago now. And their intent was to provide an environment for clubs that didn't, and tools for clubs that didn't have these things, like forums, internet space, and a way to attach themselves. I mean, it goes into a whole philosophy of what a club is and how it's formed. And a club can be as organized or as just as loose as you want. But the end of the result is, as many people want some of the tools. They want internet forums. They want things.
Yeah.
So the 40K Fight Club provides that.
Okay.
And if you want to call yourself part of the 40K Fight Club, they have a process to that, which you petition them. Then you have to have a chapter master and a lieutenant. And you have to have, and who would have to be donating members to the Fight Club. And then you get forums, and you get a series of benefits from them. Mm-hmm. But it's basically a community, and we have, the 40K Fight Club has about 8 to 9 chapters across the country right now. So it's very large, it's very popular. Again, it's as organized or as loose as the chapter masters want to make it to be. I would be willing to bet that the Deptus Fanaticus is probably the most strict and organized of them all, versus I think one out of Kansas City is probably the one of the loosest ones.
Okay.
So it's what the members take it to be, and it's what they want to do with it.
Yeah, I'm looking at their website, 40kfightclub.com.
Absolutely.
So I guess if you're interested in possibly starting a chapter, you can go start there. So let's ask, talk about your recruiting structure, because it is a sort of a private club. Because I know you guys on Friday nights said you kind of lock yourselves in the store and no one else is outside the club and get in. So talk a little bit about how you determine who gets in the club and why you did it that way.
Well, private's probably a fair way of saying it, but we actually prefer to call ourselves exclusive.
Okay.
A lot of people have accused us of being elite because we don't let just anybody come to our chapter night. Mm. One of the first things we thought about, and we've spent a lot of time thinking about this, about what makes a club, what's the point of joining the club, especially in a GW store. I mean, anybody can go to the GW store and play, so what would be the point?
Yeah, obviously, Games Workshop is making a huge push towards community. They're trying to open new stores like crazy. You can walk in. It's basically, the store is almost more like a club itself. You walk in, you can sit there. A lot of times I go there and never buy anything. I just go there to play a game or sit down and paint figures for a few hours and talk to people. So,
exactly.
So keep going on.
So, so we had to come up with a reason why. And one of those things I pushed to him. I said, well, I want a club. I want to do this. Can I use the stores? That would be one of the hooks. And they agreed to it. But we wanted to make sure, one, they were people that we wanted to play with. How many times do you hear when you go into a GW store, you talk to somebody, I don't go there. Their tools are. I don't go there. Those guys are idiots.
You can find that in any game, but GW's got a negative reputation for that in some cases.
Exactly. So that would be the point. That would be the point of why we have the recruiting structure we do, because we want to make sure that on a Friday night, I have a family, I've got a real job, I don't get to live this as much as some other people do. So when I game, it has to be a reason why I'm going every night, or I'm going to fight the wife for the time off. So we had to put a process in place, and that process is you have to, if you want to play, you have to approach the Master of Recruits. Yes. Mm-hmm. Part of that is the dedication for you as a new member, a prospective member, to approach the Master of Recruits, to find out, one, who he is, and then talk to him about it. And he'll give you a series of instructions of what you're supposed to do. Real simple. Namely, sign up to the website. Sign up to the forums. If you're not going to do that, chances are you're not going to do a whole lot of other things. So there's a point of responsibility on your side. Then you have to fight three games against the Honor Guard or a chapter officer. And that's why you have to sign up to the forums, because the easiest way to do that is to post, I'm initiate so-and-so, I'm going to play this game, I want to play this system, these points, meet me there.
Okay.
You'll get a hit. We have enough Honor Guard, and enough of them have enough time to be there. In fact, chances are every night there's one to two Honor Guard at the store anyways.
Okay.
So once you've played your three games, the Master Recruits takes your petition into the and I kid you not, we have a chapter council, and we discuss. We all know who you are. Part of it is we evaluate who you are as a gamer. Are you just a guy looking to beat face and want to take names? If you are, sadly, we are probably not the club for you. That said, if that's not the club for you, don't go away angry. We'll help you build your own club. And we've done that a couple times. We've talked to people how to do it. So after you've been admitted into the club...
And one thing... Which one thing... Is it based on skill? Do you have to, like, do so much damage to your opponents, you have to win so many games now?
Just play the game.
Okay.
Just play the game and enjoy it. Have fun. Whether, however it is used. And we have rejected memberships, but every one of those memberships we've rejected have said, why am I rejected? I really want to be a part of this club. And we've talked to them about it, and eventually they earned the right to be members of our chapter. And I'm not saying it right, and people are going to accuse me, and they've always accused us of being too elite.
Yeah.
But we're exclusive. We just don't allow everybody in. Some clubs do. That's their business. I'm sorry, but like I said, our time is very precious to us. We don't want to be playing with people we can't even tolerate being in the same room with.
I think everyone out there who's ever played a tournament has been to some situation where you're playing some guy that's kind of a bit of a jerk or annoying, or just, you know, they're not a lot of fun to play with because it's for one reason or another. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And why should you put up with it? I mean, instead of, you can read all the anger you want on the internets about people who are like that, and why do you even allow them? Well, we're taking responsibility for that.
Yeah.
If somebody's like that, we're going to tell them, and then we're going to say, look, if that's the way you want to be about it, great, but that's not what we're about.
Yeah, I guess it makes sense. So what about some of the other decisions? Why did you kind of structure the way you did in terms of, you know, you have different people, different chapter masters to do different things, just to make things more organized? That's your really goal, to make sure everything kind of runs smooth? Is that why you did that kind of stuff?
As far as the 40K Fight Club's concerned, I don't know why the Primarchs chose it that way.
Okay.
But for the Adeptus Fanaticus, we clung on to the Astartes thing.
Okay.
Because one, we're geeks, and it was just really cool. And two, in the back of my mind, while right now the club is kind of a dictatorship, I'm the one in charge of a lot of things, I know that eventually that shouldn't be the way it'll work. What should happen is the club should take over itself. We should have voting. We should have a process for which it's handled. Plus, I can't do it all. I can't, like, run the budget that we have right now. I can't, like, plan every event. I am not skilled in the internet ability at all. So we had to have people. So it's like you said, becoming organized, giving out responsibilities to trusted individuals who can get that done. Mm-hmm. And then through a process of time, once more and more people begin to buy into what it is we're about and what it is we can do, then we can pass off some other things.
Do you have any idea exactly how many people have joined the club? Do you know? You said about 20, 30 each night. But is that most everyone that shows
up? Yeah, we have about... Well, we just opened up a third company, too, actually.
Oh, did you? Okay.
So we actually, up at the other store, the Great Lakes Crossing store, some folks were talking about doing a club and didn't want to drive down to Hampton, and I just offered, well, if you guys like what we're about, and we provide what you want, why don't you just form the third company? So we have second battle company out of Rochester and the third. We have approximately 40...
Is there a first battle company?
Not yet. The first battle company I have plans for, and that's why I kept it safe. I want the first company to be a mix of second and third and possibly whoever else comes along. But the idea behind... I lost focus.
That happens every now and then. There'll be a lot of times I'll be talking, just like freeze up and stare at the camera. I have no idea what I'm going to say.
Right. But. Oh, we have approximately 42 active members.
Okay.
We have about five who have gone on a leave of absence. And that's part of it, too, is that you can't just, within your internet board, you have like 500 members, of which 10 are the only ones doing anything.
Yeah.
We don't want that. So we put standards in there. And if you're not active, we'll put you in a leave of absence. And then there are kind of consequences of that, meaning that if you can't come to chapter night until you announce your return, you petition for your return, and... then, you know, that way we know that the people who are part of the club are active. Our people that are on leave of absence are those that went to college or just mm-hmm. they're looking for a new job, or the job they got is too rough. So mm-hmm. they aren't gone more than a couple months or two anyways.
Yeah.
And they're active on the forums for the most part. Mm-hmm. But we do encourage active participation. We just don't want a bunch of 50 people or someone who shows up mm-hmm. 7 months later and we're wondering, who the heck are you?
Yeah.
And they just want to come eat our pizza and drink our Coke mm-hmm. at our chapter nights.
Let's talk a little about what problems have you encountered? Like, how were certain things difficult for you to do? Did you have some things you just, you know, you didn't think you were going to have to do? Someone just, like, kind of broadside you, and, you know, you weren't sure that was going to happen, that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. There's been a lot of defeats, actually, in the last 3 or 4 months.
Really?
You know, while I see, once in a while we'll get one success, and then I'll have 3 failures mm-hmm. in my mind, because I have this perfectionist idea of how things are supposed to work. So the biggest defeat we had was trying to run a community event that we called the Age of Apostasy. Mm-hmm. Big campaign that we were going to hold for the community. You know, you pay like something like $20, you come play for 2 days, mm-hmm. big games in a campaign setting, very akin to what some other clubs do. But we couldn't get organized enough to do it. We couldn't get, the part of it is getting enough people to dedicate their own time, their own personal time. Mm-hmm. Even outside of the gaming night to yeah. assemble things like terrain. So it's part of that getting a group consciousness together. Is, you know, we tried sacrificing our chapter nights to say, look, you show up, but we're going to be working all this on this terrain.
Yeah.
That doesn't float everybody's boat. So people tend to get a little upset about it. And, you know, all right, well, if I can't game that night, I'm just not going to show up. And then one thing led to another. So... it's very difficult to get everybody to understand that we should be doing these things to give back to the rest of the community instead of, like you just said, a mm-hmm. private club closing the doors and doing the same thing we could do without the privateness of the club.
So this big campaign was for everyone, not just your members of your
absolutely.
Club?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. The members, actually, I would say the chapter members were going to put it on for the rest of the okay. rest of the area, mm-hmm. But we just couldn't get it together in time. You know, we had... I mean, the age-old saying is 90% of the work is done 10% of the people. This was more true of that, and the problem, and that was the problem. Mm-hmm. We needed more help. So maybe, and as the head of the club, that was probably my feeling. We probably weren't ready for it yet.
I wish there was some, you know, magical formula how you get a lot of people involved in something. So, you know, I've done projects, and everyone's done great, you know, large-scale projects with multiple people. I've done some independent films. It's just so hard to get someone really involved, you know, obviously you yourself all involved, because, you know, it's your project, you're like, this is awesome, I want to do it, but, you know, people on the outside, it's difficult, you know, to get kind of them the same enthusiasm to get in there and actually get things done, so
right.
I wish there was some magical formula we could tell people, because that is probably the biggest problem with starting a club, is getting people interested, and, it, you know, you might have a lot of people come and show up, and they kind of wane and fall off, and, you know, and eventually there's no one left,
You know, GW had a lot of interest in this club, too, and they were giving us a lot of support. It was just that it was a bridge too far for my side of the support.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a lot of comments that even no matter what you think about Adepticon, and a lot of the people that are going to watch this podcast know me and my opinion on mm-hmm. tournaments and Adepticon and so forth, but I'll tell you one thing. Adepticon, somehow, some way, they have that many people who are dedicated to organizing and running that event. It just blows my mind. I don't know where they get them. I don't, because they certainly don't live here.
I don't know. It's because Adepticon, is there 4 of those each year?
There's only one every
year.
There's
only one. Okay, I think it's something else. I'm thinking Games Day tournaments.
Yes.
Yeah, Adepticon's the one big
It's one of the, I guess I hesitate to say it's the first fan-based mm-hmm. grand tournament, but it's one of the largest.
Okay.
And it's kind of like a Games Day on crack run by nothing but the hobbyists.
Okay. So it's not actually sponsored by GW? It's just...
GW does help. I mean, because it gets GW personalities there mm-hmm. and other aspects. So there's amount of the club that runs it coming to GW for support. I don't know how far that interaction is, but mm-hmm. it's mostly fan run and it's great. Okay. Their tagline "For gamers by gamers" is pretty accurate.
How many of those have you been to?
I've never been to Adepticon.
Okay.
That gets to my personal opinions about those types of events. And the one, the in fact, I've been in a week-long angst-driven battle between a lot of people on the internet about it. But, you know, I have my own very definite personal opinions because, you know, it's my hobby, it's your hobby, it's how you want to take mm-hmm. it. I respect how everybody wants to play it. I personally think the knock-dead, beat-face, take-name, kill-you-later tournament style is a detriment to the hobby and should never mm-hmm. be done. But I respect why people yeah. want it. I play mm-hmm. in tournaments all the time. I love to win. But you know what? if someone's beat me in the face, I'm going to cheer right along with them because I'm there just to play a game. I never. Good friend of mine says that if I lose all five games in a tournament, that's five games I never got to play yesterday.
Yeah. And you're usually going to learn something from even if you get lost and get just destroyed. You know, okay, I did this wrong, or maybe I should reconfigure my army a little bit. So it's always, you know, you're always going to learn something. It's never a waste of time. Right. So it happens. You know, I don't know. It's what you like to do. Some people like just, you know.
You got to have a balance. I mean, if tournaments are the only way you're playing it, I don't understand how you're having fun. Because if I only played tournaments, and, you know, I'll go through a period where I'll do nothing but a tournament. Mm-hmm. But I'll get tired of it. And then I want to go paint. Mm-hmm. So I have something I can still enjoy my hobby, and just in a different way. Mm-hmm. Those, and I would even say those that only enjoy Golden Demon painting. How do you enjoy just painting your models? I mean, you never get to play with them. Mm-hmm. So I think one thing is too much of a bad thing. That's why it's the balance. That's why there's a big hobby. Yet I will understand when somebody does. Just don't put me in a box and tell me that's the way you should enjoy it. You're crazy otherwise.
Yeah, there's some interesting things like. On the MechWarrior forums, when I was talking about this game, you know, it's all pre-painted, you know, stuff like this. And we're talking about what WizKids did and didn't do. And I was mentioning, well, you know, why didn't the company ever have, like, basically rewards for doing custom mods to the mechs? You know, repaint them, do cool stuff like that. And the people would just get angry at me. Like, I was saying some like, basically heresy that suggested, you know, you might want to repaint and do mods to the models. I mean, it's like, holy cow.
Well, and we talked before mm-hmm. we started. I've played almost all the games. I even play War Machine occasionally. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, my first love is here with Games Workshop stuff. Mm-hmm. And the bizarre thing that I've noticed is that when it comes to the pre-painted plastics, is nobody wants to change or mod it because they're trying to compare it to this. Mm-hmm. But, again, I lost my train of thought.
Don't worry about it.
you said freaking out about changing it. How dare you? Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, we'll come back to it if you think of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the events you run. And let's start with what's in front of us right now here. I think it's all of it. It's pretty close to all of it. This is pretty close to a minimum 17-slot Force Org chart for the Tau Empire. I don't know how many points it works out to be, because over the summer, with the release of 40K 5th Edition, all the local stores did this called Golden Grot Painting Competition, where I think it was 8 weeks. In 8 weeks, you had to paint up a legal 17-slot Force Org chart, and you got a whole bunch of free stuff. And I did that, and got all my free stuff. So this is the Army. So you're telling a little story about how this particular painting event came into being is through your club. So why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the Golden Grot. I mean, if John crazy, and the guys here,
it was a
gonna,
crazy 8 couple of weeks.
Yeah, the Golden Grot was actually a really good idea, and I partook in it, although I didn't make all the gates simply because, you know, my time doesn't get me there in case, but. It kind of genesised from an idea some of us in the club had. When the Apocalypse game system came out, a bunch of us went just crazy. Mm-hmm. And I ended up buying...
Did you buy in the big sets?
Oh, yeah, a lot of them. I still have a lot of them under my game table, too.
A lot of the stuff here is from the Tau Empire, the entire Hunter Cadre they had for like $325. Yep. I bought that.
Yep. And so I probably bought more than I should have, and I ended up, you know, when it was all done, with something like 4 Space Marine companies. And that also is what I have in my own bits box.
How many figures is in a company? Just so people are not sure.
100. 100, 100 Marines. And then there's like 6 transports and something else.
Okay.
But it's 100 Space Marines. So I have probably about 400 Space Marines. Well, me and John, one of the employees at GW, were laymaning the fact that we had all these Marines, probably never get to assemble them, better yet, never play them. Mm-hmm. And I looked at him and I said, John, 1 week, assemble a company. 1 week, assemble a company, we'll play an Apocalypse game. So we did.
Just assemble it?
Assemble it, okay. No painting it. So we did. 1 week, we both assembled 1 Space Marine company, played a game. Loved it. Loved it so much that we decided to do it again. This time, you had to paint and assemble a Space Marine company in 3 months.
Wow.
And then it took life from there. We had a bunch of other people join us, so we had probably 6 more people that started it, and people said, you know, I want to add this. And so we came up with some rules. And not only just had a company by the Apocalypse book, but you could take things from the armory of a Space Marine company, like Land Raiders and so on and so forth. So me personally, I ended up with another painted Space Marine company that could be all of them outfitted with drop pods and 1 Thunderhawk. Painted. Done.
Very cool.
Locked up. So my soul was bleeding when Golden Grot came out. And I haven't... That event ended in March of 08, I didn't paint for like 4 or 5 months after that. I couldn't touch a paintbrush anymore. So when John brought Golden Grot up idea, because this is more palatable to the rest of the community, mm-hmm. not to just plain fanatics and freaks. I couldn't do it. I mean, it's been tough.
Yeah, I spent hours and hours and hours painting these things. And I mean, it's definitely a lot of good practice. I think this, some of these my vehicles over here are probably some of the best vehicles that I've ever done, except for the orange stripes are kind of screwy, but everything else I think is some of my best paint work. But
well, you know, when you know, going with the, we call it the Grand Challenge, but going from that Grand Challenge, when we broke it down, it was something like 4 models a day. Just paint 4 models a day, mm-hmm. you'd be done in 3 months.
Yep.
And when you look at it, I was like, I could do that. Problem was, when you did that, you sat down and said, I'll do 8 models tomorrow. Keep up.
Yep.
When Golden mm-hmm. Grout came out, I did my list to see what it was like. I was like, wow, that's like 2 models a day. After 4 models a day, I can do 2 models a day. Yep. Still, it was just very difficult to do. Very difficult.
So let's talk about some other events you run then. Because you mentioned you personally don't have a huge affinity towards like cutthroat tournaments. But do you run that kind of stuff?
I do run tournaments. Okay. But I don't so much anymore because there's been a surge of tournaments in the area. So mm-hmm. I guess people call me argumentative. That's probably technically true only because I like to talk. I like to interact with people. Mm-hmm. But while there's been an upside of tournaments, I've swung to the other side and run campaigns and run fun more spirit-filled events. But I've run campaigns or tournaments. I have 2 series that I haven't run in a couple of years called the Patrol Leaders Cup, which is based off the Combat Patrol rules, and another one called the Warlord's Crown.
Okay. So like the 400-point rules for 40K, those things?
Yep.
Okay, yeah.
It's actually, when you do a tournament setting, it's a little bit better to do it at a 500-point level.
Okay, 500.
You get a little more variety in the list and a little more restriction on what you can and can't do.
Okay.
Don't want to see an upswing of land speeder, salt cannon goodness mm-hmm. in that. And then had another one called the Warlord's Crown, which was based off the Fantasy Warbands, which is another 500-point mm-hmm. list for that. And then there's actually a tournament that was this weekend called UConn at UConn.
I got some emails for that sitting here.
And I passed that off to a friend of mine, Rob Hogg. I used to run it for a few years. Before that, it was an outrider named Jeff Rortilla. So it's been going on for at least 12 years now straight. I couldn't run it this time because of other obligations. But I run tournaments. I have no problem with them. I just, you know, like I said, mm-hmm. it shouldn't be the only way to play the game.
Yeah, you're right.
There's other things.
What about, you talking about campaigns? So what kind of campaigns do you run? Do you just run like linked battles? Do you have people where you have to like keep track of the losses per battle? And what kind of stuff do you do for campaigns?
Absolutely. It's run the gamut. I think me and, again, my good friend Jeff Wild down in Garden City, we change it up. Because mm-hmm. with campaigns, you don't want someone playing a numbers game with you. Like at tournaments, if I win this many, I make this many points. So here's my variables. We change the system up every time. I have one that's been going on for 5 years since the birth of the 40K Fight Club.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
5 year campaign?
Absolutely. It's very little well known, but it's been going on.
I think that's the second longest campaign I've ever heard. The longest is 30 years. And I'm not kidding. For a game called Clear for Action, it's a World War II naval combat game. These guys swear they've been playing it for 30 years, the same campaign.
Yep.
Tell us about the 5 year campaign.
Well, the it's called the Gallus Crusade. It started when the 40K Fight Club came out. I told the Primarchs it'd be great to do this. They said, yep, we'll do it. And so every year, at about the first of the year, when Fight Club came online, we do this campaign. And it's mm-hmm. story, narrative-driven. The story is based off this idea that when the Eye of Terror burst, if everyone remembers the Eye of Terror mm-hmm. campaign way back when.
I believe it's on Wikipedia if you don't know much about it.
Yeah, so if you just do a Google for Eye of Terror campaign, you'll find it. But it was about how the warp overtook the system called Gallus. And Gallus was a major industrial complex for the Cadian Gate. Well, when the result of the Eye of Terror happened, the warp storms receded a bit. Also, because the Adeptus Mechanicus were able to figure out how to. If you read the novels, you understand what I'm saying about that. So in the power struggles within the Imperium, they decided to take it back. And they established a crusade. So the Gallus Crusade started literally when they entered the Gallus Cluster to mm-hmm. begin the campaign. And every year, we do something a little different. Last year, we took over. We killed the War Master called Xavier Singh.
Mm-hmm.
We killed him off. So there's now a new one in power. It's a little something a little sinister going on with him. But behind it all, there's an Inquisitor called Solomon Kane who has been doing. He does yearly updates back to the Inquisition as mm-hmm. to what's going on. And Solomon, we have characters. I mean, Solomon is his own character sheet that the chapters can play in. So I do keep a record of it. I have right now about a 200-page, I call it a book, I guess, of everything that's happened. People's stories, we do encourage them to write narrative stories about what happened. Cool. I keep a running storyline of it all. One of the chapters actually continues it. He'll probably do he'll do another story aspect of it once or twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the story is rich, and you know he's made it his own too. He'll contact me if it's okay to change this or alter that, because I do kind of want to try to keep creative rights on the total storyline, mm-hmm. so I can direct it when a new campaign comes up. But mostly it's I guess it's fan based. You know, the chapter members from each chapter report up. Last year we actually did a kind of an Ioterra kind of reporting where each planet, every chapter in the Fight Club wanted a planet was given a planet. And each planet, the results of their battles affected other planets.
That's cool.
So if Chaos was winning on one planet, it would make it easier for Chaos to win on another planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had kind of an elaborate system going on with that. The year before that, we didn't keep score at all. It was just all story-driven. And if I happened to like a little story thread, someone's going, okay, I'd flavor it. And I would pass out special rules for the period. So in second period, if Chaos seemed to be winning, I would say, all right, Chaos, you all get Furious Charge. Because you guys are just doing so well.
Okay, yeah.
Imperium, you all are stubborn because you're just not going to give up.
Mm-hmm.
And we just do silly things like that. So every year I kind of take a different flavor. This year, actually, Age of Reckoning, the Warhammer Online game, gave me some really interesting ideas to do with a campaign, with its tiered system and so forth. So I'm looking forward to trying to start that.
So do you actually take the battles and turn them into like a fictional story that becomes part of the history then?
Absolutely. Oh,
that's
pretty
cool.
I mean, there's one that actually lived in infamy called the Battle of the Temple of Tara. It was a really cool kill team mission, and I have taken the kill team missions and flavored different rules to do a more special operations kind of thing. I'm a veteran myself,
okay.
So I really get into military orders. So I issued out this military op order to a friend of mine and said, "Look, go play this." And he got someone else and they played, and the kill team mission turned into the 40K battle, which I designed the scenario for, called the Shrine of Terra. And then they played that, and they said, "That this is great, we're not getting anywhere," you know, back and forth. So they turned it into a much bigger apocalypse-style game.
Okay.
So it actually lived in infamy for quite some time, and we actually revisited it a couple times in later chapters of the story.
That's pretty cool. Sounds like so any other kind of events you run? Anything else?
Campaigns. I mean, we our club won the table at Games Day this year. We ran the Super Grippa, which is kind of a one-off. It's a one-hour game based in the 40K universe with orcs and dirt bike racing and stuff.
Yeah, I found one mention of that here, but I didn't find too much. Well, I might have spelled it wrong, though, but yes, a little bit on the internet about that.
Yeah. If anybody wants, I'll forge you the rules. It's real simple.
Okay.
I think they're GW rules in the first place anyways. You just don't see too much about it. Other than that, we run everything, so there's really not much that we don't do. Our chapter nights, the store is small, so we don't run tournaments in the store. But we run campaigns, many small campaigns, or just general gaming in real.
Sounds pretty cool. So anything else you want to talk about? In terms of your club? We got a few minutes left here, so not much.
We're just, we're about building communities. In fact, while there's a dual-edged sword, we would like to see other clubs get formed up in the area so we can do some club-on-club rivalries, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
We will ask all the time, why would you want to join any club but ours? But, you know, understand, not all flavors for all people, but the more clubs that get active to get in the area, the more things we can do with clubs and between clubs. Right now, there's only two in this entire metro area that I know of that are officially formally organized.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you're three people gaming in a basement or in your living room or whatever, you're technically a club. You're technically hanging out, having fun, doing what you like to do. We would like to know who you are so we can get to know you, maybe have you over to our chapter night, and hang out a little bit.
Sounds pretty good. I was going to ask something about the campaign stuff. Like, have you ever done the type of battle, we've only done it once, myself and Kyle, using MechWarrior stuff, but where it starts off maybe like a small battle, you know, reinforcements come in, objectives change. You basically have like a game master running the campaign, the one huge battle, and things change as it goes along. You're into stuff like that?
Yeah.
That's a lot. I think that's my favorite thing to try to do, where you actually have, so it almost plays like a very intense video game mission where, you know, recon in this area and all of a sudden you get ambushed and then you got reinforcements coming over here. Have you ever done stuff like that?
Yeah, I have. Not with this club, not with clubs in recent years, when it was just me and my friends in our basement. Because sometimes what you do is based on the level of friendships you have. Mm-hmm. If people aren't taking their personal pride in the game itself and can get over the ongoing changing missions. Mm-hmm. I tried to do that exact kind of military feel to it where you'll enter the game or the mission in one way, but as you play it out, it changed on you.
Yeah.
Because in military operations, the enemy always gets a vote. Mm-hmm. I tried to design scenarios, and some of the campaigns are designed to do just that. Sadly, that doesn't always enter the fair factor. Oh, it wasn't fair or it wasn't balanced.
That's,
it wasn't meant to be. It was meant to be fun and see if you can what you can do with what you have.
It's because, you know, rarely do two militaries come with the exact same value of army, you know.
Right, right.
Those kind of campaigns, someone's going to have the upper hand, you know. You just got to realize it's about having fun, telling a story, not about necessarily, you know, you may still have a shot to win, or, you know, maybe you have different objectives where it's not necessarily defeat the overwhelming enemy. Maybe it's just, you know, hold them off for so long or something. But.
Right. We built this, when we founded our chapter, we held this big event for the community, for the store. And we built these walls, and we held this massive siege, apocalypse style.
Mm-hmm. And 40K?
Yeah, in 40K. And so what we did was, I played Chaos, and I organized all the Chaos players, and someone else organized all the Imperium players. And we built some very specific missions. One was Chaos just had to breach enemy friendly lines. Mm-hmm. Second was, the Chaos had to knock down three sections of the wall. The Imperials had to prevent us from owning all the table quarters. Mm-hmm. Very weird, very odd objectives. Well, me and the Chaos players had a very focused way we were going to do it. We organized as much Forge World as we can bring, and we thought we had it. We thought we'd take it in 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be darned if the Imperium players didn't figure out another way to switch the objectives on us. It never once occurred to me, even when I wrote the scenario, mm-hmm. that all they had to do was prevent us from achieving it. Mm-hmm. They never once left their foxholes.
Oh,
perfect
yeah.
military strat. I just, you know, hadn't been a soldier for 10 years. I never thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
So a good example of how the enemy always gets a vote and can always change the objectives mm-hmm. on you if you weren't careful.
Because one thing I'm trying to work on, it's actually going to be for the MechWarrior game, but you could basically change it up to apply to anything. It's very generic. But it's using a card-driven system where the players kind of build the battles with basically what cards they have in their hand. So therefore, you know, it's a dynamic, changing campaign, but you never know exactly what's going to happen. Because you can only control certain factors of the battle where your enemy controls other certain factors based on the cards you play. So I'll talk more about it in the future. I just finally got some stuff written down for it. So it'd be kind of fun to try it out and see if that works, you know.
I'd be interested in looking and checking that out, yeah.
So, well, we're getting towards the end of the show here. We only got a few minutes left. So the last little thing I just need to talk about is actually an email I got from a listener. He was asking me a question pertaining to actually Battletech. He's a big fan of classic Battletech. So we were talking about that before the show. And in the case, especially now that Whiskers is kind of closed, a lot of the, you know, the MechWarrior pieces are going to go pretty cheap on eBay. And he's wondering, are there stats in terms of classic Battletech for a lot of the MechWarrior pieces? And he had one book, because basically WizKids released only one book for that, which basically for some of the earlier mechs from the Dark Age sets, they released the classic Battletech sheets for them. So essentially a lot of the mechs that are new in the Dark Age, there's no actual records for them. Of course, some of the mechs that are in MechWarrior Dark Age and Age of Destruction are obviously from the classic Battletech. Here's the Griffin, so... You know, some of them are familiar. Like this guy, so you can look in books like Project Phoenix has a lot of like the guys like the Griffin and some of the other old mechs. 3067 has some of the mechs, the Solitaire, I know, the Glory Fire support tank, and some of the other figures from Age of Destruction. And also with the Jihad storyline, some of these Dark Age mechs are actually from the Jihad storyline. So those new books and stuff released for that, you will be seeing more record sheets for these MechWarrior figures. So if that makes any sense, I kind of made that up as talking. But yeah, that's basically it. So there was only one official book for converting MechWarrior pieces to classic Battletech, but some of the mechs either A, are available in other books, or will be coming out in the future as the Jihad storyline progresses. So with that, any last things you want to say for about a minute or two?
No, it's great. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. It was a lot of fun.
Hope you have more of our chapter members to be able to come here and strut their stuff a little bit.
We'd love to do some real true army tactics where, you know, you actually like discuss, you have your army here, how do you play your army? So it's not just talking about, you know, okay, well, the Tower of Fireware is good for this time of scenario. It's like, how does your Fireware work with the crew and with the broadsides and things? You know, actually talk about army tactics.
Well, I'll tell you, my tactics lean towards more philosophical and not army-driven.
That's fine.
We talk about what a kill zone is, your avenues of approach, how best to utilize those things, and it really applies to any army. So I don't get into the mathematical equations of probability and so forth.
Not a problem. But All right. Well, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Any questions or comments, you can send them to me, jason@rocklesoftware.com. You got a question for Jerry here, just send it to me. I'll forward along to him. Or you can probably go to deputysofanaticus.com and get a hold of you that way.
Absolutely.
Right?
Look for my username is The Librarian.
Sounds good. Once again, follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/TT_battlefield. Ryan's not here, so I'm not going to promote his Twitter account, but it'll be in the show notes. Do you ever use Twitter? You know what that is?
Oh, yeah. I know what Twitter is.
Okay.
Yep.
Do you have one?
Every time I'm making bacon, I let everybody know. I'm making some good bacon today. Had some good eggs this morning.
That's what Twitter's good for. All right. Well, thanks for coming on. So have a good night, guys. We'll see you guys in about 2 weeks, next episode of the Tabletop Battlefield.
Copyright 2007-2008 Rocko Software, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License.
Each music down with everything is by the transfer and is acquired from www.podbaitlighter.com and is used in their Creative Commons license.